You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 17th of June 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAlbion.com. Well, I just want to begin today by adding a little bit of a postscript to what I was talking about yesterday. I just want to make it clear that where I was coming from, it wasn't criticism of Paul's ideology. Wasn't criticism of Paul as a person, it was criticism of the decisions he has made as the leader of Britain First. And it was coming from a position originally of support. If you do a search on the RadioAlbion.com website for Paul Golding, you will see that I've only ever spoken about him in positive terms before. In actual fact, we devoted part of a podcast to talking about how great one of the speeches that he gave was, and we've also restreamed some of his content at the website, and you'll find evidence of that if you search for his name. So the criticism that I was making is coming from somebody that really wanted to support Paul, and I bought his book, and then after reading about the mistakes that he made in the book, and then seeing the mistakes that he's made since, the criticism I am making is that I don't think he is any good as a leader. He's obviously got that drive there. He obviously he knows that something needs doing, but he's effectively like a hamster in a wheel or a dog chasing its tail. And now the wheel has fallen over. Protests of more than six people are now banned in London, and Britain First is essentially a protest group. They are a street action group. So now what's effectively happened is through another one of his disastrous leadership mistakes, all protests have been banned. So I don't really know what Britain First are going to do now. And if they hadn't had that protest last weekend, the reasoning for this would have been Black Lives Matter and Antifa, but instead we've got Priti Patel telling the Commons she was saddened and sickened by the far-right thugs who went to London at the weekend on a so-called mission to protect statues. Far from protecting the country's heritage, Ms. Patel said counter-demonstrators in Westminster on Saturday were patently racist and thugs and did all that they could to destroy and undermine those values. There is no place for their sickening conduct and hate in our society, she says. And she uses the so-called far-right demonstration as the reason for banning protests in London. And yesterday I pointed out that Paul forgot to re-register Britain First as a political party with the General Election Commission, and how that meant that he didn't have the protections that he would have had as a political party. But I forgot to mention something else. It's even worse than that. Britain First lost their Facebook page, and Paul moved to Northern Ireland to be under Northern Ireland law, because they have a law there, apparently, against censorship of political parties. So he was hoping to sue Facebook for taking his page down, and he collected a lot of money from people to do that. Only then he forgot to re-register the party, so he didn't actually have a defence, because he couldn't say he was a political party because they were no longer a political party. It's just something else that I remembered. Now, if I had made all those mistakes and I was leading an activist organisation, I would be looking for somebody else within that organization to lead and playing a supporting role. I mean, just one of those mistakes, really. And if he hasn't got somebody in his organization that is capable, then he should look to other organizations, perhaps to his old colleague Mark Cullett from the BNP with the Patriotic Alternative, who does put other people first. We can see that he puts other people first. I mean, yesterday I said he puts other people first above everybody else, but what I really should have said is above his own interests. And we can see that from the fact that he doesn't collect money for himself at the end of the conference. He collects money for the waiters and waitresses and the people that have helped with the event. And that's just one example of it. Mark really does put others first, and there's no way he would have risked harm coming to his followers by encouraging them to go to something like that demonstration on Saturday. There was a chap called Rob Bradford who sent a picture of him in a head brace in hospital yesterday. This was me yesterday. The police purposefully led five of us to 300 or 400 black lads. Now, how many times has that happened? That happens every time when there's a counter demonstration. That is what happens. So why is it still happening? Why have we still got people leading our nationalists and patriots into obvious traps like this? This is what I'm pointing out. He is making mistakes that are making everybody else look bad, and also putting so many people at risk. So what I'm saying is that I think he should really take a look at whether he is leadership material, because he's just leading his troops off the edge of a cliff, basically. And I think if he wants to be supporting Britain and putting Britain first, then he should be supporting Mark, not making the rest of us look bad. Anyway, as I said, that was just a postscript, and it doesn't come from any personal animus against Paul, because I really did want to support him. This comes from looking further into it. And also that bit that I said about him recommending people look at the Sky History Channel, that came from an interview, not actually from his book. Anyway, I want to look at something else today, and that is the George Floyd killing and the autopsy report. And I've found a really good article here, and it actually comes from The Truth Seeker, which I didn't realize was still going. It was a blog that I used to read years ago, so I'm very pleased to see that they are still going, a conspiracy theory sort of blog, and they've got a very, very good article on George Floyd. They say, it is widely believed that George Floyd died from a police officer's knee on his neck, whether due to asphyxiation or neck injury. That may be how it looks to a naive viewer. In reality, the county autopsy report says he died of a heart attack and states that there were no life-threatening injuries. Then how could they conclude that it was homicide? When scientists review scientific papers, they look primarily at the evidence and give little weight to the conclusions, which are only the other guy's opinions. To blindly follow expert opinions is the authoritarian view of knowledge. This is no real knowledge at all, because to assess whether an expert is always right, we would need infinite knowledge, and doubly so when experts disagree. Not thinking for oneself is not really thinking. And I'll just stop there, because what he's saying here is very important, because it's the conclusions that a lot of the so-called experts reach that are in actual fact false, not the studies that they do. Take David Lammy's study, for instance, that found that black people were 10 times more likely to be stop and searched. Black people are 4 times more likely to be in prison, and they are less likely to do well at school, more likely to be in young offenders institutions. And all of that is fact. But the conclusions he reaches from that is that there must be systemic racism that's causing that, which is ludicrous. The conclusions that should be reached from that is that black people are more likely to commit crime on average, and black people are less likely to do well at school, on average. And in actual fact, quite considerably, when you think that they are four times more likely to be in prison. So the studies that are done are correct, but the conclusions that are often reached are false. And we all have what Dr. E. Michael Jones explains is logos. We all have this ability to decide what is the truth and what is not the truth. And you discover what the truth is by looking at the facts, not looking at the opinions that you are told, but looking at the facts. And what's happened here is we've been told that George Floyd has been killed by a racist. He was choked to death. But when you look at the facts, you see that that's not true. You see that the guy that was supposedly a racist, he was married to somebody non-white. You see that there's no evidence of actual racism there. And when you look at the autopsy report, you see that he wasn't choked either. So let's have a look at the details of this autopsy report. Floyd's blood tests showed a lethal concentration of fentanyl of about three times the maximum that has been recorded in a survivor, even when receiving intensive care. So that's not three times the maximum safe dose of fentanyl, but three times the maximum that has ever been recorded in somebody surviving an overdose, even when receiving intensive care for that. So it's pretty obvious that he was having a drug overdose. Fentanyl is a dangerous opioid, 50 times more potent than heroin. It has rapidly become the most common cause of death among drug addicts. The knee hold used by the police is not a chokehold. It does not impede breathing. It is a body restraint and is not known to have ever caused fatal injury. And just because his knee looks like it's on his neck, it needs to be on the front of the neck to actually impede the breathing. Floyd already began to complain, "I can't breathe," a few minutes before the neck restraint was applied, while resisting the officers when they tried to get him into the squad car. And this ties in with the fentanyl, because fentanyl affects the breathing. And when it causes death by respiratory arrest, because it affects the cells that are responsible for controlling your breathing. It was a normal procedure to restrain Floyd, one, because he was resisting arrest, two, probably in conjunction with excited delirium, which is an episode of violent agitation brought on by a drug overdose, typically brief, and ending in death from cardiopulmonary arrest. And this EXD thing was quite important in this, I think. The official autopsy gave cardiopulmonary arrest as the cause of death and stated that the injuries he sustained during the arrest were not life-threatening. This contradicts the coroner's own conclusion of homicide. So the autopsy says that he died of a heart attack. He had three times as much of this drug in him that most people have when they have an overdose. And the injuries that he had on his body were not life-threatening. And yet the coroner has said that it's homicide. So obviously through media pressure, probably scared he'll be accused of being a racist if he doesn't say this. So he's given a false conclusion. Videos of the arrest do not show police beating or striking Floyd, only carefully restraining him. In one video, Floyd is heard shouting and groaning loudly and incoherently whilst restrained on the ground, which appears to be a sign of the violent shouting phase of EXD, excited delirium. It appears that an excited delirium episode began when the officers tried to get Floyd into the squad car. He resisted, citing claustrophobia, which would tie in with the onset of the fear and panic phase of EXD. He then said, "I can't breathe," and difficulty breathing due to fentanyl locking into the breathing receptors in the brain is likely the reason for that. He then exhibited unexpected strength, which would be from the adrenaline spike, which we are told you get from EXD, in successfully resisting the efforts of four officers to get him into the car. Don't forget that. He was resisting four officers. When Chauvin pulled him out of the car, he fell to the ground. This was likely due to the disorientation and reduced coordination phase that you get with EXD. Presumably, this is when he injured his mouth and his nose started to bleed, and the police made the first call for paramedics. His nose could have started breathing just from the overdose, I should imagine, rather than just falling on the ground. Whilst restrained on the ground, he exhibited agitation, shouting and hyperactivity, trying to move back and forth for several minutes. This was soon followed by sudden cessation of struggle, respiratory arrest, and death. And that is exactly how EXD happens. One hears Floyd shouting loudly, as in the agitated delirium phase in the video. In a later video, he becomes exhausted and had stopped breathing as the ambulance arrived. And the police had acted correctly. They had called for paramedics. They had assessed the situation, I think, correctly. It appears that disorientation had already set in when the store employees went to Floyd's car and asked him to return the cigarettes he had bought for a fake $20 bill. He refused. So he refused to give the cigarettes back for the $20 bill, which, I mean, he could have just done that and driven away and none of this would have happened. But he refused. And the store employees reported the incident to the police, saying that he appeared to be very intoxicated. And he certainly must have been very intoxicated, or he would have left at that point, fearing arrest. And it's quite clear, I think, that he was intoxicated and unable to drive, basically, and possibly not really knowing what is going on. The county's ambivalent autopsy also included the following hard facts. Toxicology findings, blood samples collected at 9 p.m. on May 25th, before Floyd died, tested positive for the following. Fentanyl, 11 nanograms per milliliter. Norfentanyl, 5.6 nanograms per milliliter. Methamphetamine, 19 nanograms. Morphine, 86 nanograms. But then draws no conclusions therefrom, noting only that quantities are given for those who are medically inclined. Well, shouldn't we be so inclined? This fentanyl concentration, including its norfentanyl metabolite, at its molecular weight, was 20.6 nanograms per milliliter, and that is over three times the lethal overdose, following earlier reports where the highest dose survived was 4.6 nanograms. So he's got 20.6 nanograms in him, and the highest known dose that anybody has ever survived is 4.6. I mean, this is an open and shut case. This guy died of a drug overdose. Regarding the suffocation, the county medical examiner's report found no physical findings that support a diagnosis of traumatic asphyxia or strangulation. So this is the medical examiner's report, is saying that he wasn't strangled, he wasn't choked. However, pressure applied to the side of the neck, as in this case, and not to the throat, has little or no effect on breathing. And you can check that for yourself. You can push your hand to the side of your neck, and you can see that you're not going to be able to strangle yourself. In actual fact, in France, the police there, Macron, when he saw this video and saw these protests, he said that they were going to ban this so-called chokehold from the police being able to use it. And he's had to walk this back, because the police have said, look, you know, we need to use this. It's a safe hold. It's not strangling somebody to death. It is restraining them on the ground so they can't get up and attack the police, basically. The charge sheet against Chauvin included this exchange between the two white officers on the squad. I am worried about excited delirium or whatever, Lane said. And Chauvin replied, that's why we have him on his stomach. So it's not like they're making this excuse up afterwards. This excited delirium is exactly what they were concerned about, and they were following the rules, basically. According to this dialogue, Chauvin was apparently trying to follow the protocol recommended by the WJEM. Since Floyd was on his stomach, Chauvin's knee, pinning him at the side of his neck, did not impede breathing. Commentators are referring to Chauvin kneeling on Floyd's neck or resting his weight upon it. From videos, it is hard to gauge how much weight he applied, but the correct procedure is just enough to restrain movement, not to crush the person. And it looks to me as if he's not crushing the person. He's sort of leaning back a little bit on his feet. This is not there's no way that they can make the charge of murder stick here, because that's what they've done. They've said murder and racist murder, which means that this police officer deliberately tried to kill this Floyd just out of some bizarre hatred for a skin colour. And it's not going to stand up in court. And once again, we're going to see all the blacks rise up and claim that it's a scandal, an absolute scandal, and white supremacists have got away with it because of the way the media have presented this, when the facts are all there in the autopsy report and laid out here. Chauvin and his team might not have done everything perfectly, but it is easy to underestimate the difficulty of police work, particularly in cases of resisting arrest, whether willfully or due to intoxication. And this is the main reason why these incidents happen, is because black people are so likely to resist arrest. They're far more likely to resist arrest than white people are. I mean, we saw that with that other incident this week where there was somebody drunk, who was so drunk that he'd fallen asleep in the queue in his car at the drive-thru at Wendy's. And when the police were talking to him and trying to arrest him, he decided he was going to steal the taser and try and run away and then fire the taser at the police. And this, I don't understand why this is. Maybe because most blacks have previous and they don't want to be charged with anything again. Maybe that's the reason, but they really do seem to take massive risks in resisting arrest. If you're going to be arrested by the police in America, they're all armed. You don't want to give them any excuse to think that you are resisting arrest. And yet these blacks and non-whites just seem to want to take that chance. EXD seems to be the most likely reason why Floyd suddenly refused to get into the squad car and began to shout and writhe on the ground. With or without EXD or police intervention, he was doomed to die quickly, even if an antidote had been immediately available. And I haven't seen these bits where he's shouting and writhing on the ground, but quite clearly something must have happened for him to end up on the ground anyway. And as we hear here, the four police were trying to actually get him in the car. It's obvious he was resisting arrest, and then these police officers thought, well, hang on a minute, looks like he's having a drug overdose, he's having one of these EXDs, we have to restrain him in a position where he can breathe. I mean, they're not trying to strangle him here. If you look at him, he's on his side, which is really the sort of right position. You certainly don't want him choking on his own vomit or something like that. Well, fentanyl is so deadly because it acts so fast and binds so tightly to dopamine receptors in the brain, even those that control breathing, unlike other narcotics. So this is how it works. It fills up those receptors in the brain that tell your body to breathe. So they're really, even if the police officer hadn't been on his neck, he would have still died from respiratory arrest. When Floyd complained, "I can't breathe," although he was breathing and then completely stopped breathing, this was the onset of respiratory arrest, which is how a fentanyl overdose kills. So Floyd would have felt that he was unable to breathe, and yet he'd still have been able to talk because it was working on these receptors. It wasn't actually a weight on his chest that was stopping him from being able to breathe. I really think that when this goes to court, the police officers are going to be found not guilty. The same as always happens. It always happens. They always the left and Black Lives Matter, they always pick the worst possible cases to accuse of racist police violence, and they always get found innocent, and it just always encourages more unrest. You really would think that they would actually find a genuine good boy who didn't do nothing to actually make into one of their marchers, but they don't seem to be able to find one. It's always an instance like this. It's always somebody who's a criminal that's tried to rob the gun from the police officer, or it's somebody that started attacking the police officer. It's never a case of just somebody innocently doing nothing at all and being killed. And I think it's something like 10 times as many whites are actually killed by the police. And why they would suggest that this was somehow racist, where has the accusation that this police officer was doing this out of racism, where has that come from? It's just simply the fact that the police officer is white and Floyd was black. I mean, maybe they will cover this up. We have got instances of evidence like this being ignored. Don't forget, James Fields is doing 430 years in prison or whatever, regardless of all the evidence that showed that was an accident that happened there. And that was caused by the public feeling. So we'll just have to see whether public feeling causes a miscarriage of justice to take place in this case. But anyway, it's a very good article there from thetruthseeker.co.uk. So maybe it's a British writer's blog. Even better. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk radio for the nationalist community.